True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
Oh, and first pitch, reaching deep left field. This is way back. Welcome on.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, and Chris.
Whoa there! You wanted offense? We got a bunch of it on Tuesday night. Welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on Wednesday, April 27th. Frank Stanfield joined by Scott White and Chris Towers. Today on the show, we're going to deep dive a few hitters doing big things, or at least they did on Tuesday. We'll see how sustainable it is, some buy-high pitching candidates, the drop-o-meter, and much more. But first, take it away, Susan.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Oh, my goodness gracious, Scott. Who you got?
I'm going to talk about Anthony Rizzo for, oh, my goodness gracious, a three-homer game. He's up to eight on the year. This is a guy whose home runs were in steep decline for several years, and I had pretty much written him off coming into the year. I had him outside my top 20 at first base, even though he had been a top 10 performer for so long. But now he's hitting a bunch of home runs again. Now, two of the home runs were Yankee Stadium home runs, that wouldn't have gone out in many other stadiums at all. I think we were talking before the show. I think you said, Chris, the average distance of the three home runs was 350 feet. So some short home runs being hit. But Yankee Stadium is his home now, and he seems to have adapted to it. It seems probable to me, it's very intentional that his fly ball rate and pull rate are both way up so far. And not that they were bad to begin with, but they're way up right now. So it's almost like he's taking aim at that short porch in right field, and the results are obviously good so far. He maintains a low strikeout rate. He did that even throughout his struggles the past few years. And I recently moved him into my top 12 at first base. I think you have to. Let's see. Who notably did I move him ahead of? I didn't move him ahead of like Rhys Hoskins or even Joey Votto, though I can understand why somebody might want to put Joey Votto behind him. I just have unusual faith in Joey Votto, I guess. But they're close to equal footing right now, probably, Rizzo and Votto for me.
Yeah, I recently moved Rizzo up to 14 in the first base ranks. That was obviously before this game. I could see moving him ahead of Max Muncy, Jake Cronenworth, and then you get into like Ty France, who obviously we've all moved way up, is off to a great start. And then there's Votto and Hoskins and the rest of the profit pocket. CJ Cronen and Josh Bell are off to pretty good starts. So yeah, look, if Rizzo continues to do this, we'll continue to move him up, obviously. But Scott, you highlighted
Torkelson. I moved him ahead of Torkelson. That was probably the number one.
One of his home runs, he had four balls hit between 97.6 and 99 miles per hour today, which is very impressive. Those are four hard hit balls. One of them had a launch angle of 48 degrees and went 327 feet.
Beautiful.
Like, beautiful. Where would you set the XBA on that stat, on that batted ball? Expected batting average for a ball with a 48 degree launch angle and 327 foot distance.
I think I saw it, Chris. I think it was like under 100.
Yeah, I would set it at under 100, sure.
Divide that by 10. It had an expected batting average of 0.10.
Oof.
The other home runs had an expected batting average of 380 and 180. His ground out had a higher expected batting average than any of his home runs today. I don't know what to do.
Gotta love it.
Like, yes, he plays at Yankee Stadium. And so, like, this is what we expected Anthony Rizzo to do last season. I mean, not this. This is a, 55 homer pace, maybe more. Nobody expected that. But we expected him to be very good in Yankee Stadium. And so I'm inclined to believe he will continue to be good at Yankee Stadium. But I also think there's definitely an opportunity to sell Anthony Rizzo right now.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
Because he's the number one first baseman right now. I assume he passed Ty France with this performance.
Like, we thought he would be good when he got traded last year, but none of us moved him into our top fives at first base after the trade. So I would be inclined to try to move Anthony Rizzo right now. If someone gave me Joey Votto for Anthony Rizzo, I would rather have Votto. Even though I wouldn't necessarily rather have Votto in my lineup right at this moment than Anthony Rizzo.
What does that factor into the thinking?
But I would rather have Joey Votto for the rest of the season. I have more faith in Joey Votto.
Oh, that went so close, Chris.
I just finished saying I have Votto ranked ahead of Rizzo still, and I do. But if I had Rizzo right now and somebody offered me Joey Votto for him, I would expect more than Joey Votto for
sure.
him.
Sure.
Right. That's fair. I'm not going out and sending a trade offer of Anthony Rizzo for Joey Votto, although that is a classic buy low, sell high situation. I think you could probably get more than that.
You have little faith.
I suspect the Votto owner is, and they shouldn't be this way, but I think that just human nature, this is the way the average fantasy player thinks, is like getting close to dropping Votto, at least seriously considering it at this point. And they shun it. But yeah, I mean, that's just, you should be able to buy Votto really low, and using Rizzo is not the way to do that.
I don't think you can pull this off, but if you can, like, try and buy one of the pitchers who are off to a slow start, like a Zach Wheeler, someone like that. Freddie Peralta got back on track a little bit.
I'm sure you can pull it off in some leagues, and it just depends how savvy the group that you're playing with. It's not a bad idea to recommend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Look, Rizzo last year and past couple of years really has been dealing with this back injury too. So I think as long as he's healthy and he's basically selling out for power in Yankee Stadium, and I say that loosely because he's not striking out more or anything. He's literally just hitting the ball in the air and pulling it more. He's actually hitting the ball really hard too. I think he's going to be good as long as he's healthy, but you just kind of worry with that back injury the past couple of years.
He's
with
hot Anthony right Rizzo, now, you know, in like the classic sense of the word.
Sure.
So, you know, it's also worth keeping that in mind that his hot streak happened to coincide with the start of the season, which is always nice.
Especially when there's almost no offense anywhere else, Chris.
Yeah, but it's important to not let that color your perception too much. Because he will have a cold streak at some point. He will have a batted ball that goes 327 feet, and the Yankees happen to be playing in a real major league stadium, and it'll just be an out.
What a hater. I mean, what a hater.
Over under 20 home runs the rest of the year for Anthony Rizzo.
Over under 20.
So that would be
over under 19 and a half home runs, let's say.
I would probably take the under.
I'll take the over. That would get him to 28 home runs. Yeah, at least
I'll take the over 28 home runs would be the most he's had in a season since 2017.
Yep. He's got to stay healthy, but if he does, I think he can get there, obviously, with this torrid pace that he's off to. 76 home runs is what Anthony Rizzo is on pace right now. 8 home runs over his first 17 games here. Chris, oh my goodness gracious for you.
Yeah, it had been a disappointing start for Patrick Sandoval, who we were talking before the show. You guys don't really have Patrick Sandoval on any of your teams. That's because I have him on all of my teams. And so it's been an especially disappointing start for him. But he was excellent tonight. 9 strikeouts, 1 walk in 7 innings, 2 hits allowed against Cleveland. Obviously, Cleveland, pretty good matchup. But yeah, the changeup looked like we want it to look today. He got 9 swinging strikes with that. Had a 38% called strike plus whiff rate. I think I got it right that time, which is very, very good. Quality of contact metrics were all pretty good. So yeah, this was exactly the kind of start we wanted to see from Patrick Sandoval, because he had only gone four innings in each of his first three starts, which was, not a great sign, but, or each of his first two starts.
So, yeah, this was only his third start.
Excellent, excellent stuff from Patrick Sandoval. Exactly what we wanted to see.
And I noticed for Sandoval, too, in those first two starts, he threw his changeup only 19.2% mm-hmm. of the time. The changeup is the pitch we've been raving about all along. It was 34% of the time in this start, responsible for 9 of his 15 swinging strikes. So I think, like, because the strikeout numbers, the swinging strike numbers, they weren't that impressive in those first two starts in addition to them being short. And I think maybe he just hadn't gotten that changeup to midseason form now, and maybe this was the start of it. I noticed his roster rate was down to 82% on our site, which,
go at
him. Given how rostered pitchers are on our site specifically because of all the head to head points leagues, like that, it shocked me how low.
And this was a 2-star week, right?
They have a
six. No, they have a 6-man rotation. It wouldn't be.
So it wasn't.
Next week, though, as long as they don't have a day off.
Yeah, if they have 7 games next week, it would be. For Patrick Sandoval, what I love most about this start was the control. I mean, in his first two starts, he had 5 walks total. In this one, just 1 walk. And walks have been an issue for Patrick Sandoval in the past. So we know the whiffs are there. It's just he can get himself into trouble a little bit when he starts walking too many batters. Chris, I don't know if you saw this, but I was watching the Angels game, and they put up a graphic that showed Sandoval's average fastball velocity. The first two innings of this start, 95 miles per hour. The next three innings, it was between 93 and 94. The final two innings of work for him, he was below 91 miles per hour on the fastball. It might not mean much. Obviously, this was the deepest he's gone into any start this season, but does that matter to you at all that the fastball velo dropped off as precipitously as it did for Sandoval in the start?
I mean, it would matter if it meant he was hurt, but absent any other evidence, like, he threw 90 pitches in this start. He hadn't gone deep into his previous couple of starts. We know that this is still a point where, like, I think this would be right around the point where guys would be ending spring training relative to where spring training began. So I still think you can give a little leeway on that, but it's certainly something to monitor. If we see a similar trend the next couple of times out, that wouldn't be ideal, but no, it's nothing too alarming right now.
All right. All in all, a tremendous start for Patrick Sandoval.
By the way,
yes.
From that game, do you know who leads Major League Baseball in OPS right now?
Mike Trout.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
There he's you good. Go. He's back on track. He looks pretty good. Yeah. I think, what was it? Three more hits in this game. He hit his, two more hits in this game, a double, his 5th home run of the season, batting well over 300. Mike Trout, he's pretty good.
Yeah. I moved him back up to 2nd in my outfield ranks, and I moved Ronald Acuna up to 4th in my outfield ranks, by the way.
Oh,
I mean, just call him up now.
I did something similar, Scott. I moved Trout up to 2 in points leagues, and then I believe I moved Acuna up to 2 in Roto.
Trout is 99th percentile in sprint speed right now.
I mean, be nice to get him running on the base paths. I saw a play where he was just zooming around the bases. I think it was a double by Jared Walsh. Trout actually got thrown out at the plate, ironically enough, but he was, he was flying. So it would be awesome to get him to run a little bit. For me, oh my goodness gracious, Charlie Blackmon, a double dong on Tuesday, now has 4 home runs. 3 of those 4 are on the road this season. And what I noticed for him, the pull rate, much like Anthony Rizzo and a few other hitters we'll talk about, the pull rate is way up for Charlie Blackmon. He's at 50% entering Tuesday's action. The 2 home runs that he hit, they were to the pull side. And for his career, that's 41.5%. So we've said this time and time again, for hitters who hit for power who are not necessarily power hitters, a way that they've been able to do that is by pulling the ball more than ever. And Scott, if Charlie Blackmon is starting to do that, this might be part of the, I don't know, renaissance for his career. I don't think he's going to go out and hit 30 home runs again, but if he's pulling the ball this much, you know, maybe we can get 20, 25 home runs again from Charlie Blackmon, which would be very welcome.
It would be the Black Monissance, by the way.
I'm not going to rule it out, But I'm going to bet against it. Okay. I'm going to bet against it because you'd think if that's what was happening, if he was making, you know, if he was pulling the ball in a way that would allow him to be more prolific with home run. Like you'd think it would show up in the Statcast data, like specifically the expected slug. He entered this game with an expected slug of 403, which is the lowest it's been since 2015, the first year of Statcast. I'm sure he wasn't even a good player yet when that started. So, you know, even last year it was 457 versus 403. And that's before this game with the two home runs, and it's probably higher now. But I just, you know, his average exit velocity is only in the 35th percentile, and it's consistently low. And I just think it's a long shot that that's how this plays out for Charlie Blackmon, especially given the environment we're dealing with this year.
Yeah, I mean, 25 is probably a stretch, but if he gets to 20 home runs with the way that he makes contact and playing in Coors Field, I mean, that's just going to lend itself right there to probably a 270 plus batting average. It's not a tremendous player. It's not a standout player, but it's a much more valuable player than he was last year or even in the shortened season. So
I don't know what a standout player is anymore, Frank. Throw numbers at me. I don't know what they mean.
Look, right now, Charlie Blackmon might be a standout player the way that offense is going right now. But
yeah,
look, it's a welcome sight for Charlie Blackmon. Also a welcome sight for Willy Adames on Tuesday. All he needed to do was go up against the Pittsburgh Pirates. He might have listened to the podcast last night. Who knows, Scott? But a double dong for Willy Adames as well. 3 hits, 7 RBI in this game. Had a bunch of people tweeting at us saying, man, thank you for talking up Willy Adames and getting him back on track. So patience, everybody. Good players. They're going to be fine. It's a weird season so far with these humidors. Yeah. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. But
the underlying stats, I'm sure you mentioned this yesterday, but the underlying stats mostly look fine for Willy Adames.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. All right, so I wanted to, we've talked about Rizzo. We've talked about Charlie Blackmon. There are a few other hitters. I wanted to take a little bit of a peek under the hood. I don't know what to name this segment. I just wrote under the hood. I also thought something with like secret sauce. If anyone has a better name, email us in and let us know what we should name the segment. Wander Franco went 1-for-5 with his 4th home run of the season through 16 games now. He had 7 home runs through 70 games last season. And how is he doing this so far? He's hitting the ball harder overall. His home run to fly ball ratio is way up. It's going to go up after this latest home run that he hit. But is it sustainable? And I took a look. 97.6 mile per hour average exit velocity on fly balls and line drives is 12th best in baseball. So, Chris, the answer to that question is if Wander Franco continues hitting the ball as hard as he is in the air, then I think this very high home run to fly ball ratio might be sustainable for him.
Yeah, I mean, that's an if for sure. But yeah, based on what we've seen so far, the underlying numbers suggest that underlying numbers suggest that he hasn't been particularly lucky, I think is the best way to put it. You know, maybe he should have 3 home runs instead. I don't know what the actual, like maybe he should have 3.7 home runs instead of 4, something like that. I don't know, but he's hitting the ball really well right now. He's been, I mean, he's got to have one of the highest swing rates in baseball. I'm 54% right now. He's going up and he's hacking. He's barely walking at all, 3% walk rate, but he's also not missing when he swings, and he's not sacrificing quality of contact, even though he's being super aggressive. So, you know, I think that all speaks to the preternatural skill set that this guy has and how good he can be. So it looks slightly different than what we expected from Wander Franco, but I think you have to be pretty encouraged so far.
Mm-hmm. He also has 1 steal on the season, so a very welcome sight there. Not that we expect him to steal that many bases, but again, the power is welcome early on here for Wander Franco. Adolis Garcia is an interesting name. He hit his 3rd home run of the season, and the profile is kind of interesting for Adolis Garcia this early. The walk rate is up to 8%. Not great by any means, but it is higher than it was last year, and his strikeout rate is down 26%. Compared to 31% last season. Scott, Adolis Garcia is crushing the ball early on, 94 mile per hour average exit velocity. I think with this improved plate discipline, hitting the ball as hard as he is, a little bit of power, a little bit of speed, I think that, you know, Adolis Garcia is improving overall, and we might see that kind of bear out as the season goes along.
Well, I'm going to pour water, cold water on this idea too, Frank.
All right.
Sorry to be, sorry to be the negative one today, but yes, it is true. Adolis Garcia's walk rate is up for the season. In his last 11 games, he has one walk and 14 strikeouts. So, you know, one of the principal ideas of Moneyball, that now 20-year-old book, is that plate discipline can't really be taught. And I think time has shown that to a degree it can be, but it's still something you should bet against. So, you know, he walked a bunch in his first few games, but I think that's normalizing for Garcia, which isn't to say he still can't be what we drafted him to be, which is a low batting average power speed guy. But I'm not really anticipating a step forward for Garcia this year.
Okay. I just remember him going so late in drafts, and obviously in points leagues, he takes a hit because of that plate discipline, but you know, in Roto, if he hits between 230 and 250 with 25 homers and 15 to 20 steals, that's still a pretty valuable player. So we'll see if Adolis Garcia can pull that off. Trevor Story, I want to take a look here because under the hood for the wrong reasons, he went 1-for-5 with two more strikeouts on Tuesday. He's batting 231, does not have a homer so far this season. Chris, anything under the hood here that you notice with Trevor Story that actually has you worried? I mean, obviously there's going to be a transition period going from the NL to the AL, from Coors Field to Fenway. But what are you seeing with Trevor Story?
Well, first of all, he had a 414-foot batted ball today. So that's the kind of thing where, like, yeah, he doesn't have a home run. He very easily could have today.
Too bad he's not.
Would have been.
Too bad he's not Anthony Rizzo.
Been a home run.
Yeah. I'm not sure exactly where he hit it, but I would guess it was to that weird triangle thing at Fenway.
I think they're in Toronto right now.
The weird triangle thing in Toronto. You know, whatever. He's not hitting the ball well right now. You know, that's like there's not much beyond it. It's not like his batted ball profile is what it normally is, and he's just not getting the benefit of Coors Field. He's not hitting the ball well at all right now. His average exit velocity, hard hit rate, like whatever you want to point at, it's all in the 35 percentile or lower. 15th percentile in hard hit rate, 33 percentile in exit velocity, 18th percentile in barrel rate. He was never Giancarlo Stanton in regards to those things, but consistently throughout his career at course as a Rocky, even last season, he was well above average in the quality of contact metrics. And so, I don't know, maybe switching leagues and, you know, not signing until relatively late and all that stuff, maybe that's just thrown him off and he just won't have a good season because of all that. But I tend to think the likeliest answer is that he's just not locked in right now. And we're going to see a stretch where Trevor Story's locked in fairly soon. And eventually the numbers will look more or less like we hope they will.
All right. Well, this goes without saying, but if you can flip Anthony Rizzo for Trevor Story, I think it's something you should look into doing. You know.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
I don't know how many.
We talked about this yesterday, Frank, where I kind of look at barrel rate as an indicator of hot or cold. His Trevor Story's barrel rate is 3%. At least it was entering this game.
Yeah.
So that's really bad. That he hasn't heated up yet. He hasn't been barreling up balls the way we're used to seeing him do.
Not that those barrels would be nearly as valuable.
No. That's another discussion.
What's up, Chris? What were you going to say?
Oh, I just, could I throw another player in this group to look under the hood?
Yep.
Cabrian Hayes had a three-hit game today?
Yes.
Yes.
Three hits and a walk today.
Double jinx from Frank and I.
There are some really good things happening with Cabrian Hayes right now. His quality of contact metrics are up across the board, and he's still hitting the ball on the ground too much, but plate discipline much better so far than we've seen in either of the previous two seasons or stretches that we've seen from him. He's hitting a ton of line drives. He's hitting the ball hard. His expected batting average entering today before a three hit game was 327. So I like what we're seeing from Ke'Bryan Hayes right now. The home runs, yeah, zero home runs. That's not great. And he's got a high BABIP, but he's earning that high BABIP right now. And I think the home runs are going to come. So I really like what we're seeing from Ke'Bryan Hayes right now.
Yeah, his batting average entering Tuesday was 327. You mentioned the XBA was exactly 327. His slugging percentage, 423. His X-slug is 508. So
yeah,
hopefully more extra base hits coming for Ke'Bryan Hayes. The plate discipline has been great. 8 walks to 10 strikeouts to this point in the season. I don't know if he's ever going to be someone who lifts the ball that much. I mean, he's typically hit a lot of ground balls so far. But yeah, so far so good. Maybe someone that you can buy high, but it's not really a buy high because he doesn't even have a home run. A buy medium on Ke'Bryan Hayes right now. Let's take a look at some waiver wire hitters. Ian Happ, 1-for-3 with his second home run of the season. He is batting at 333 early on, 62% rostered. Scott, where would you be looking to add Ian Happ? Based on this roster percentage, it's probably just 3 outfielder leagues. Should he be added in those?
I don't have him ranked like a 3 outfielder league outfielder. I as a hot hand play, that's fine. And it's probably a fine line between my 50th outfielder and my 38th outfielder or whatever. So he could enter that discussion. But I think there are some pretty obvious downsides to Ian Happ too. And I'm not necessarily expecting a big breakout from him this year.
All right. If you need a corner infielder, Dan Vogelbach just keeps hitting 2-for-5 with a double, an RBI, and a run scored. He's only 18% rostered. And I'm just going to keep mentioning this guy's name until you guys say something. Anything good about him? Eric Hosmer, 2-for-3 with 2 walks. He hit his first home run of the season. He's now batting 390 with a 971 OPS. His home run was off of a lefty. He's hitting a ton of line drives, and he's another one where the pull rate is way up for Hosmer this year. Almost 48%. That's 34% for his career. Chris, I don't know. I kind of buy into the narrative too. Like, he had to hear all the trade rumors in the offseason and how Eric Hosmer has done. And I don't know. He's been around for a while. And I just see that as something that can motivate someone like Eric Hosmer. If you need a corner infielder, who would you rather have between Hosmer and Dan Vogelbach?
Yeah, I mean, look, he's someone who has talked about, like, there have been a lot of people who have told Eric Hosmer, like, hey, you should change your swing. And I remember seeing a quote that was something like, well, why would I? You know, it was kind of like, I've been so successful, you know, throughout my baseball playing life. And maybe this was the first time that, you know, he really saw not the light at the end of the tunnel. What would be the opposite of the light at the end of the tunnel? The darkness at the end of the tunnel?
Light.
The problem is he's hitting the ball on the ground basically just as much as he normally does. Not quite.
That was the biggest issue, right?
His line drive rate is way up. His fly ball rate is where it normally, or his ground ball rate is where it normally is. So I don't know. I don't think there's too much there, but it's possible, you know, if you dig into the splits of the splits, you know, you said he's pulling the ball more, maybe, you know, what you don't want generally is, especially as a left-handed hitter, you don't want to pull the ball more if you're pulling it on the ground.
That's what I was just looking up.
And his pull rate on ground balls is 52%. That's a bad thing for Eric Hosmer.
But his pull rate on fly balls is also
fly the balls and line drives is up. Yes.
Yeah.
So that's a good sign. I don't know how much of a good sign it is, or, you know, whether it's there's anything sustainable about it. But like, his XBA is 311. His X slug is 405. Entering today. So that would mean that his X ISO would be 96, which is bad.
Which is bad.
It's very, very low.
And his ISO entering Tuesday was 107. So, it wasn't great to begin with. And we talked about it. He hasn't really barreled up any balls so far.
I think it's just BABIP, probably. But, you know.
And having a disproportionately high line drive rate that is not It would be among the league leaders if he can sustain this line drive rate. It's not unthinkable, but it's out of character, and I would bet against him doing that. And yeah, I mean, he's not, even if he is pulling the ball more, he can't be hitting the ground ball on the ground 55% of the time, probably, and being a difference maker in fantasy like that.
All right,
I think we might have said something nice about him in there. At some point,
we were less dismissive than usual.
That's fair. That's fair. I would take Hosmer over Vogelbach for now. Vogelbach is kind of interesting in his own way, but I've seen Hosmer available in some 15-team roto leagues with corner infielders. So, I mean, he's clearly an afterthought right now, and he's playing well. So, at least in deeper leagues, make sure that Eric Hosmer is rostered. Odubel Herrera is back for the Phillies. He went 2-for-4 with a double, hit his first home run of the season on Tuesday, added 3 RBI, 7% rostered. He was pretty solid last year in like the most five outfielder league way possible. He hit .260 with 13 homers and 6 steals. Scott, what format, how deep would you be looking to add someone like Odubel Herrera?
It'd have to be pretty deep. And I am not confident he's going to be playing every day anyway. Probably just against righties.
Yeah, so. He didn't play on Monday against a lefty on the mound.
Yeah, pretty low end.
All right, let me give you a little bit more of an interesting player here. Santiago Espinal, 3-for-3 with a double, a walk, 2 RBI, and a run scored. He's 14% rostered. On CBS, he has second base and third base eligibility. He's hitting a lot of line drives. He hits the ball hard. He's playing every day for the Blue Jays. He's got 2 homers and 2 steals early on. Scott, any interest in Santiago Espinal?
I was taking a look at him based on this performance. He has stolen two... He has stolen two bases already. He has hit 2 home runs already. His XBA is .307. His XSLUG is .525. So, I mean, the data suggests that he deserves the production he's given so far. I'm skeptical there's much upside here. So it's not a high priority for me. I mean, I understand on a needs basis, okay, he's eligible at second base. Is he eligible at third base too, which would even be even the bigger need?
Yep.
Using him and seeing where it goes, because like, what's your alternative? But I'm not expecting him to be an impact player this year when all's said and done.
All right.
There's not much in the minor league track record either. So it's hard to see much being there.
For me, it's just getting an everyday player in the Blue Jays lineup, especially once Teoscar Hernandez is back. It's pretty valuable. So I'm kind of interested. Sheldon Noisy is the last name I wanted to mention. 2-for-4 with 2 steals. Don't really see that as a part of his profile, but hey, 2 steals are 2 steals. So pay attention to him. He's second and third base eligibility. The birthday bros. We had a few big birthday celebrations on Tuesday. Joey Wendell, his 32nd birthday, 2-for-3 with a sock and a shoe, his first home run and his third steal of the season. He's making a ton of contact early on, also hitting way too many ground balls. 21% rostered is Joey Wendell. Chris, you have any interest in your boy, the Marlin?
No, I mean, he 15 teams with, you know, he's eligible at a couple of different spots, so there's some interest there. And I mean, it's hard to see a scenario in a 12-team league where I'd have too much interest in Joey Wendell, but I don't know. I guess if I've been hit hard by injuries in the early going or something, I could use him. But no, not too interesting.
All right. The 30th birthday for Aaron Judge on Tuesday. He went 2-for-4 with his 4th home run. And if you're wondering about his expected stats, .326 is the XBA. .697 is the expected slug for Aaron Judge. Better days should be on the way, hopefully. Let's take a quick break, and when we return, we've got news and notes here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com. The news and notes. Adalberto Mondesi left Tuesday's game after tweaking his knee on a pickoff attempt, and the initial check, according to Mike Matheny, was, quote, encouraging, but we've seen this movie many times before with Alberto Mondesi.
Yeah, definitely had that here we go again feeling with the Mondesi injury. And he's done nothing but steal bases so far, which you can't really hold a lack of hitting against anybody to this point in the season, I guess. But hopefully he's okay.
I believe, he has 5 steals. He was batting 140 entering Tuesday, and the Statcast page filled with a ton of blue. Which
mm-hmm. He has 5 steals, and he's been on base 11 times.
Not great. Pop.
That's a good rate. I mean
no.
Yeah.
He's eventually going to have to get on base at least 25% of the time, right?
Yeah, but...
We hope. Yeah. We hope that's the case for
not months. Not super impressive so far.
Bryce Harper played catch on Tuesday for the first time in a week and will continue to exclusively DH until at least May 3rd. He's dealing with that elbow injury. Liam Hendricks is considered...
It didn't feel good after playing catch was the report that I saw.
Yeah. Hey, still stole a base on Tuesday. Liam Hendricks is considered day-to-day due to back spasms, but hasn't been ruled out from appearing in Tuesday's game. I don't believe he did that. He reportedly slipped in the dugout between the 9th and 10th innings. On Sunday, Luis Robert is expected back from his groin injury on Wednesday. Mitch Haniger and Paul Sewald are with the Mariners, but haven't been activated off the COVID IL yet. Jonathan India was activated from the IL on Tuesday. He was leading off for the Reds. Chris Bryant scratched from Tuesday's lineup due to a stiff back. Let's watch this. Unfortunate. And Chris Bryant seems like he's always dealing with something as well. Brian Reynolds and Cole Tucker were both placed on the COVID IL. Eloy Jimenez underwent surgery Tuesday to repair his torn hamstring tendon, expected to miss 6 to 8 weeks. Moved him outside of my top 40 outfielders. Could argue he should be even lower, I guess, based on that timeline. Jose Altuve took part in all running drills prior to Tuesday's game. He's on the IL with a strained left hamstring. Blake Snell is scheduled to make a minor league rehab appearance at High A on Thursday. He's on the IL with an adductor injury. Chris, if and when Blake Snell returns, who do you think gets the boot from the Padres rotation, or do they just go with a six-man? Do they have a six-man right now? No, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Nick Martinez has been taking a regular turn, right? So they must have a six-man. Mm. Not that Chris.
No.
But I assume Martinez.
No, because with Snell on the IL, they just replaced Snell with Gore.
Okay, so they were going to go six man.
Okay,
Snell was healthy.
So they technically can go six man rotation when Snell is back, and it's something that might benefit Snell and Mackenzie Gore and even Nick Martinez. If anyone's going to go, it's probably going to be Martinez, but we'll see what happens there. Teoscar Hernandez felt good after taking batting practice on Tuesday, saying he no longer feels his oblique strain at all. Josh Bell back in the lineup after tweaking his hamstring this weekend. Lourdes Gurriel out of the lineup on Tuesday due to hamstring tightness. Aaron Hicks placed on the paternity list and will miss the next 3 games. Mike Zunino left Tuesday's game with a left bicep strain, but Kevin Cash said he expects Zunino to avoid the IL. Reds manager David Bell said Hunter Green will start on either Friday or Saturday at the Colorado Rockies. Chris, I'm guessing this is a pretty easy sit in daily leagues, right?
Yeah, I generally think even without the velocity drop in his most recent start, you'd be sitting Hunter Green against the Rockies, of course.
Yep. Luis Castillo will make 2 additional minor league rehab starts before joining the Reds rotation. Stephen Kwan was out again on Tuesday with that hamstring injury. He's now missed 2 games in a row. Brandon Marsh was back in the lineup Tuesday after dealing with an illness, and they were going up against a right-handed pitcher, which meant Joe Adell was on the bench with Taylor Ward leading off once again. Joe Adell's been playing, but there's been some weird things going on. Trout missed a few games here and there. Taylor Ward didn't start the season. Brandon Marsh was just dealing with an illness. So now that everyone is healthy, it's going to be interesting to see how often Joe Adell gets in the lineup. I'm skeptical myself as of now. Gary Sanchez could be placed on the IL with that abdominal injury if he still doesn't feel all right on Wednesday. We talked a lot recently about the humidor situation. Ken Rosenthal and Eno Saris of The Athletic reported that batted ball distances have decreased most in the 20 stadiums with the newly installed humidors. This seems to lend itself to your theory, Scott, that offense will go up around baseball as temperatures and humidity rise in the coming months. And look, I don't want to spend too much time on it. I know you guys were talking in depth before we started, but at least we know what is causing, I guess, the decrease in home runs and offense early on.
Well, we don't know exactly. The most obvious thing is actually that there's more universal use of the new baseballs, the deadened baseballs, which weren't consistently used last year. Though I seem to remember they were more consistently used last April, specifically when offense was especially bad. But I could be wrong about that. I couldn't find verification when I went looking for it. But yeah, the humidor adds another layer of uncertainty. And with more research and quotes from smart people, it does seem like Eno Saris kind of is suggesting the same thing, where if all the balls are being stored at a humidity that is the average humidity, basically this is the time of the baseball season when humidity is at its lowest, right? So the balls are more humid than the air around them right now in general, and as we get into the summer months, the ball's humidity is going to be less than the air around them, at least in certain parts of the country. And that will allow the impact on the ball to be harder, the ball to carry farther. Hopefully offense goes up in the summer every year, of course, but it could be more drastic, the increase between April and say June this year than we're used to seeing because of that added effect of changing the humidity of the ball in a way that's not going to match up with the environment around it.
Go out.
One thing I will say is this is the kind of thing that I'm looking forward to. People who are smarter than me, writing several thousands of words and putting together charts and stuff, even beyond, obviously the very good work from, Saris and Ken Rosenthal this time around. There was something from Bruce Arthur in Baseball Prospectus about the ball having more drag this year. But the one thing about the environmental factors is, if we can assume stability in the ball itself, like the manufacturing aspects of the ball, the environmental stuff is much easier to model. Remember when Coors Field got the humidor, when Chase Field got the humidor, there were very accurate predictions made based on various models about how this was going to impact production. So I do think in the next few days, hopefully, maybe next few weeks, we'll start to get some more granular data from some of the projection sources about the impacts this could make. And we'll have a more holistic view, because obviously I think one of the issues with this kind of thing, and it's unfortunate that it's been something that we've had to spend so much time talking about over the past couple of years, these changes to the ball and the offensive environment as a result, is like, there's not a lot of value, I don't think, in like, oh, this guy, but not that guy kind of analysis. I think it's more what it means for the league and what it means for the context and how you build your team within that context. And so hopefully we'll have a better sense of that soon.
Well, it's hard if you're building the team when you don't know the context yet.
Team's built. For better or worse. What I mean when I say like the this guy versus that guy is like, we looked prescient when we said DJ LeMahieu and Kevin Biggio would be especially affected by a ball that travels less. And now DJ LeMahieu's off to an amazing start. And so it's like, right, he's probably just hot, but it's also like, that's why the specific, like, this player will struggle, but this guy will be fine. I don't find there's that much value in that right now until we have that more holistic view and we can say what the general kind of impact is more likely to be at a top level. So hopefully that's coming soon. Right now, it's just kind of, for me, it's a sort of frustrating, like, wait and see.
I think the answer for this season is to go out and buy hitters right now who are impacting the ball hard but are not seeing the results that they should to this point in the season. But, and we do that anyway. We bring up a lot of those names regardless. But I think the effect is that, as Scott has mentioned, as the season goes along, we're going to see those guys rise to levels even quicker or further than we've seen in the past, like in terms of
no, I mean, candidates. Obviously hitting the ball harder is better. That goes
without that would be saying. True in any offensive environment.
But the more deadened the ball becomes, the more drastic that difference between guys who impact the ball hard and guys who don't is going to be.
Yes. Go out and acquire Giancarlo Stanton right now because he's still hitting the ball really, really hard. He just has not had great results to this point. Last but not least, speaking of Stanton, the Yankees are cheaters, which we basically already knew. There was some uproar about this letter from Rob Manfred to the Yankees, and it was revealed on Tuesday, but didn't really show any new information to my knowledge. Anyway, the Yankees, the Red Sox, and Astros, they're all cheaters. That's the biggest takeaway.
Can you guys just stop complaining about it then?
What do you mean?
Like, can Yankees fans just shut up?
I've never said anything, Chris. This is
the royal you. You're standing in for Yankees fans right now.
Okay.
Just like, we don't care anymore. All right. You guys cheated. Sorry, other teams were better than cheating on you.
Yeah, I mean, that's ultimately what it comes down to.
Like, you should have scored more runs in that series.
The Astros were better cheaters. I mean, that's honestly what it comes down to. Interesting buy high candidates. I'm going to present three names here. Two of them for interesting reasons. Logan Gilbert had a strong start on Tuesday. 5 2/3 shutout, 7 strikeouts to 3 walks. He's off to a very good start in general. And I don't even think he's at his best yet. Like, you look at his underlying numbers and they're really not that impressive. So if those numbers get better, then there's a chance that Logan Gilbert can be even better. I don't think that's possible.
Oh, but why are you presuming they're going to get better is the thing.
Because
the swinging strike rate is average. The strikeout rate is average.
The first pitch strike percentage is down. CSW is down, but they were all higher last year, Scott. So, I mean, I would assume that they kind of normalized towards last year. Maybe I shouldn't assume that, but if they do, then I don't know. I think, you know, the results can remain for Logan Gilbert. He's one. Sandy Alcantara is another one where, kind of similar to Logan Gilbert, I don't think that he's been at his best yet, and he still had 3 quality starts in a row. So if he gets on track or does what I think he can do under the hood, then I think better days could even be coming for Sandy Alcantara. Chris Bassitt is throwing his secondary stuff more. I've mentioned this multiple times now. I think this might be the best version of Chris Bassitt that we've seen. It's only been 4 starts, but I subscribe to the theory that being around other smart pitchers and great pitchers can make you a better pitcher. And I think we might be seeing that with Chris Bassitt. So, Scott, how would you rank these three in terms of, like, if you're trying to buy high on them right now? Logan Gilbert, Sandy Alcantara, Chris Bassitt.
Alcantara, Bassitt, Gilbert. I mean, I don't think you're getting any at a discount, so I'm just going to rank them in the order of how good I think they are.
Yeah. Buy high, Sky. We're not buying low. One thing that I think this
highlights is, and it's kind of been one of the cases that has been made for Alcantara over the past couple of seasons, is just that even, like, we've been hoping we would see a consistent strikeout rate rise, and we've seen it gradually, and then there's been fits and starts. Second half of last season, he had a bigger swing strike rate rise and a strikeout rate rise, but the nice thing about Sandy Alcantara is he doesn't need that to be good. You know, if he isn't a very, very good strikeout pitcher, okay, maybe the ceiling's a little lower relative to the other high-end pitchers, but it's hard to see a healthy Sandy Alcantara finishing like 38th at starting pitcher, you know, because like the ERA, the whip, those are going to be good, even if he doesn't get a ton of strikeouts and he's going to pitch deep into games consistently. Again, assuming health. And so there are more avenues to him being very good than there are very bad, I think is the way I would put it. And so that's why, like, you're not buying him at a discount right now, but I'm not nothing, none of the underlying stuff not being there, the strikeout rate, the swing strike rate, etc., none of that is reason for me to be concerned, because I think Sandy Alcantara can still be very good. Whereas with Logan Gilbert, we don't know yet. You know, we all like him, we all like the talent, but he wasn't great last season. And so, you know, I'm less likely to buy right now on Logan Gilbert than I would be on Sandy Alcantara, just because we're still trying to figure out what kind of pitcher he is and what he looks like when he doesn't have his best stuff, how many avenues he has to success. So, you know, there's just more uncertainty there.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I think there might be savvy fantasy players out there that will see these underlying numbers and think, oh, well, let me try and cash in now while I can. And I'd still be looking to buy all three if I can. Again, that's Sandy, Logan Gilbert, and Chris Bassitt. The dropout meter. Let's quickly run through some of these names. Germán Márquez has now allowed 7+ hits and 4 earned runs in 3 straight starts. Chris, 74% rostered is Germán Márquez. What is the dropout meter? And let's kind of calibrate this. 10 is absolute must drop in any format. 1 is no. I'm definitely holding this player no matter what.
I would say probably 5.5. I think he's definitely droppable, but 5.5 is the average of 1 and 10. So that's where I'm going.
Okay. Would you drop him? These are a few of the most added.
Like, I think at this point, Germán Márquez is who he is. And there's not really like, there's not a lot that's going to change my opinion of him one way or the other. And so I think he's a frustrating player who's useful to have around, but like, I didn't start him this week in the league where I have him, which I believe is a 12-team roto league. I'm generally not going to start him when he's at home. I know the splits have been inconsistent year over year, but generally speaking, I just think you're better off using him in good matchups. And yeah, so he's droppable. Yeah, if there's someone you want to add.
Yeah, I think if you're not using him in a two-start week, today was on the road against Philly. His next start is at home. He probably doesn't need to be rostered, and he's 74% rostered, so that's why I bring it up. Scott, not the best results for Josiah Gray, but still had 10 strikeouts, so this one's kind of a weird one. It's just, I think that there's good stuff here, but it's just so hard to trust Josiah Gray because he walks so many, 4.5 walks per 9, and his fly ball rate is 48%. He's 79% rostered right now, the drop-o-meter on Josiah Gray.
Yeah, you definitely see the potential, but still a little rough around the edges. I'll put it at 4. I'd rather not drop him, but he's not. I'm not going to be super protective of him if there's somebody I'd like more.
I like Josiah Gray. He's what Shane Bieber would look like if Shane Bieber had 40 grade command instead of, you know, 60 or whatever it would be.
Yep. That
80.
Makes sense. Tristan McKenzie was meh at the Angels on Tuesday. 5 2/3, 7 hits, 4 runs, 6 strikeouts to 0 walks. 84% rostered is Tristan McKenzie. Chris, where is he on the drop-o-meter?
Probably like a 4. I would prefer not to drop him, but there's so many pitchers who are pitching well right now that if you've got a guy who's just okay, who's just pitching okay right now, yeah, I think it's worth considering. But like, I think I would hang on to him in most 12-team roto leagues.
All right. Mitch Keller was likely picked up for a lot of two-start weeks. He's 36% rostered. 4 2/3, 4 runs allowed, only 1 strikeout up against the Brewers. He gave up a 2-run homer to Willy Adames in the first inning, and then he really settled down. And then his final inning of work, he kind of imploded once again. Scott, where are you at on Mitch Keller drop-o-meter?
8. I was going to say 8, actually. Yeah, I have a feeling this isn't the last time we've waffled on Mitch Keller. But the fact is, 3 of his first 4 starts have been bad. He threw his fastball 68% of the time last time and got good results. He was back to like 50% in this start. And by the way, the velocity was down like a mile per hour. So if he's not going to be able to hold that velocity, it's, you know, one start being down a mile per hour doesn't say that. But I saw nothing but bad signs from Keller in this start.
The one thing that does give me pause is his quality of contact metrics are quite good right now. In a way that's never been true in his career. He's always gotten hit pretty hard. So that is the one thing that, like, maybe the added velocity is helping him with. But I just, it feels like it feels like Nick Pivetta, and I'm sure there are other versions of this where it just like, I feel like at some point, like it's just the pitching part of it isn't there, you know, like he's like that thrower versus pitcher dichotomy. I feel like Mitch Keller is very much in that camp, and I don't know how high the upside is to keep chasing, you know?
The control is what stood out for me in this one, too. It's, you know, his one good start this year, he didn't walk anyone. And in this start, he walked two. His first two bad starts, he, you know, walked a good amount as well. So
yeah. Well, he talked about continuing to go heavy with the fastball after that last start. Like, he seemed to recognize that was a winning formula because it's the pitch he can locate best, and it's the pitch that batters have the hardest time hitting. So, I don't know why he went away from that.
Chris, are you dropping any of the util-only bats right now? We've been getting a lot of questions. Franmil Reyes, 0 for 3 with 3 more strikeouts. On Tuesday, he's batting 164. Nelson Cruz went 1 for 4. He's batting 174 early on. Would you be dropping either of these, Reyes or Nelson Cruz?
It's really hard to have a guy who's utility-only and who isn't hitting in your lineup, but I'm not particularly inclined to drop them based on what we've seen so far. If I was the guy who drafted them, I'm riding it out. Like, Nelson Cruz's quality of contact, underlying numbers are still really good. Maybe not quite as good as they've been in the past, but his expected WOBA is 362, his actual WOBA is 240. His strikeout rate's actually down to 19%. He's still hitting the ball hard. I don't see much reason to think that Nelson Cruz has just lost.
All right. Franmil Reyes, someone in the YouTube chat asked beforehand, would you drop him in a points league? And it's, I mean, in a format like that, it's a little bit tougher because he's just striking out so much and he's not doing anything. So
yeah. If I was going to comment, and I was trying to keep the show moving, but what I would say is I might drop Reyes in a points league. Yeah, that's it.
That's fine.
All right. Three waiver wire pitchers who might be available. Scott, do you have any interest in these? Zach Eflin. He's now allowed 2 earned runs or less in 3 of 4 starts. Daniel Lynch, back-to-back scoreless outings. And then Chris Paddock put together his best start of the year, 5 2/3, 1 run, 6 strikeouts. Any interest in those three?
Paddock's probably the most interesting, just given his history and the fact that the underlying numbers, you know, they really haven't changed that much from his rookie season. So I don't see big changes in the underlying stats now either. But maybe the changes he needs to make are less perceptible than that. Not saying I'm rushing to add him. Lynch obviously has upside as well, but his fly ball rate's really high, so I'm not sure he's going to have as much success when the weather warms up.
Quick thought on each of these. Kevin Gausman now has 8-plus strikeouts in 3 straight starts. Chris, I don't know if there's anything else to add outside of Kevin Gausman's like a top 5 to 7 pitcher right now.
His slider has been really, really good this season. Yeah, he's a top 10 pitcher right now for sure.
Yep. Brandon Woodruff couldn't get through 5 innings against a Brian Reynolds-less lineup on Tuesday. It's been a weird start, Scott, for Brandon Woodruff. 2 strong starts, 2 subpar starts. Anything to actually worry you here?
You got a ton of whiffs in this start. I think he's fine. Just one of those days.
All right. Joe Musgrove, a solid start, some rough defense behind him. He gave up 5 runs. Only 2 of those were earned. Fastball velo down a little bit. But the control has been amazing. Chris, anything on Joe Musgrove?
Defense was bad in Major League Baseball today.
Yes, it was.
There were like 14 or 15 unearned runs across baseball, which is a really high number. 7 of them were on Josh Fleming's start for Tampa Bay. But yeah, no, I think he's been pretty impressive. Not great, but you know, not as good as he was last April. I don't think he's going to be that guy, but certainly no concerns.
Max Fried, back-to-back quality starts. Scott, I think I would put Max Fried in the buy-high conversation if you can do that right now. Velocity is up. He's getting more chases than ever before. I'm interested.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Luis Severino had a no-hitter entering the 6th inning against the Orioles. He wound up going 6-plus, gave up 4 earned runs, 5 strikeouts. Chris, this was kind of a mixed bag. He threw a slider more in this start than all season, which is encouraging. But his fastball velocity was also down over two miles per hour. What do you think about Severino's start?
The velocity is going to be worth keeping an eye on. You know, if the Yankees seem concerned, then we'll keep an eye on it. But other than that, I think it's fine. I think he's off to a really interesting start, and the increased changeup usage especially could potentially be a really big sign for him moving forward. So still pretty optimistic.
Carlos Rodon was awesome once again. 6 innings, 1 run, 9 strikeouts to 2 walks. He had 15 swinging strikes. Scott, I kind of feel like Rodon is just in that Kevin Gausman category. Top 10 starting pitcher. Lock it in. Just stay healthy, please.
10 might be underselling it.
If I could presume they'll be healthy and making 6-7 inning starts all season long, I think it would be between Rodon and Corbin Burns, who's my number one pitcher. I think they're the two that, just in terms of pure ability, with DeGrom not available, they stand out above everyone else.
It's hard to argue. I mean, you've laid it out before the season too. Rodon was awesome when he pitched last year, and so far velocity has been there, and the Giants do a great job. So please, just stay healthy, Carlos Rodon. The call to the bullpen. Kenley Jansen pitched a clean 9th for his 5th save. For the Mariners, Andrés Muñoz pitched the 9th inning with a 4-run lead. He allowed a walk and a hit. He struck out the side. He's 19% rostered. We'll be interested to see what happens when Paul Sewald is back and ready to go. Anthony Bender pitched a clean 9th for his 3rd save. He was dealing with a hip injury, but he was back and he looked okay. Emilio Pagan entered in the 8th inning for the Twins with runners on 1st and 2nd in a 3-1 game. He proceeded to give up a 3-run homer to Javier Baez. And then on the other side for the Tigers, Gregory Soto comes in for the save in a 1-run game. He gives up 2 walks, and they lose the game on an RBI single with an error. I didn't see this, but I got an update that it was some kind of crazy ending to that game. So, did you see it, Chris? I feel like you were talking about it before.
Yeah, it was there was definitely some yakety sax music playing on that one. I can't remember the details well enough to describe it, but I feel like there were 2 errors at least, including the catcher throwing the ball into the outfield to let the final 2 runs score. So
yikes.
It was bad.
You know what else was bad? The Red Sox bullpen usage. Once again, Hansel Robles pitched in the 8th inning to face the heart of the lineup, 2-3-4, with a 3-run lead. He did give up 4 hard hit balls to the 4 batters that he faced, so not great anyway. But Jake Diekman entered in the 9th. He gave up 3 hits, 3 runs to tie the game. Matt Barnes pitched in the 10th inning. Obviously, you got the ghost runner on 2nd. He walks the bases loaded. They lose the game on a sacrifice fly. The Red Sox have to do something eventually. They are a prime candidate to trade for a reliever. I don't know who that's going to be. Or just give Hansel Robles a chance, because he's been their best reliever, and I don't know. They're just not giving him the same.
I mean, Alex Cora's been talking up Matt Barnes, but the velocity's still not back, and the usage would suggest he's not as close to regaining that role as Alex Cora has been saying. So I've written a bullpen report every week, every Monday, actually, and I've been for the past couple weeks putting Hansel Robles as the top guy, even though he has just, I believe, just the 1 save so far.
Yeah. He's been their highest leverage reliever, technically, but just not really getting saves. What's up, Chris?
On the other side of that game, Jordan Romano's velocity was up. There had been some concerning signs about that, but he hit 99 and averaged 97.2 with his fastball, pretty close to where he was last season. So that's a good sign.
All right. Edwin Diaz walked 1, but picked up his 3rd save. And I saw Raisel Iglesias struck out 2 for his 4th save of the season. What happened in the Diamondbacks game? They won 5-3. Mark Melancon, a clean 9th inning for his 3rd save of the season. To stream or not to stream, let's start with Wednesday. Aaron Ashby at the Pirates, Eric Fetty versus the Marlins, Michael Pineda at the Twins, Christian Javier at the Rangers, Paul Blackburn at the Giants.
I think maybe Javier is who I'd look to there, but I'd be surprised if he went 5 innings.
I'm really interested in what Paul Blackburn's doing so far, but not enough to start him versus the Giants.
I think I'm good with Ashby. I don't know if he'll give you 5 innings either.
Yeah,
but at the Pirates, I'm interested to see what he does in that start. I think Javier and Ashby are probably the top 2 for me. On Thursday, we have Bruce Zimmerman at the Yankees, Jameson Taillon versus the Orioles, Nick Martinez at the Reds, Chris Flexen at the Rays, Bailey Ober versus the Tigers, Brad Keller at the White Sox, Garrett Whitlock at the Blue Jays, and Dakota Hudson versus the Diamondbacks. Just It's a pretty good group.
Yeah, I like this group more. I'd go Bailey Ober 1, Jameson Taillon 2, Dakota Hudson 3.
We're going to wrap there. For Scott, Chris, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye. If you've ever been in the market for a new home, you know home shopping can be a lot. There's so much you don't know and so much you need to know. What are the neighborhoods like? What are the schools like? Who is the agent who knows the listing or neighborhood best? And why can't all this information just be in one place? Well, now it is on Homes.com. As somebody who's been through this, I can tell you these features are so, so incredibly valuable. They've got comprehensive neighborhood guides and detailed reports about local schools, and their agent directory helps you see the agent's current listings and sales history. The area you live in is just as important as the house itself. You can get to know a neighborhood without ever setting foot in it. Say you're a really active person. You could find out about the nearest parks. Do they have a baseball field? Maybe you want to join a softball league like Chris and I play in. Also, Homes.com collaboration tools makes it easier than ever to share all this information with your family. It's a whole cul-de-sac of home shopping information all at your fingertips. Homes.com. We've done your homework.